And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where it is trade deadline week in the NBA. The Super Bowl is over, and to help us sort out all the rumors and the spin and the rumblings and the bumblings is the host of the Hoop Collective podcast with Brian Windhorst, our ESPN senior insider, writer, whatever your title is. Brian Windhorst, how are you?
Our fun is over, Zach. From the end of the NFL season until they start training camps in July, this is when we have to do most of our work. We do get a little respite in March for the NCAA tournament. We sort of take a bit of a backseat there, but we've got to work now. Our quote unquote light months are over.
These were light months? I'm in trouble if
relatively.
These were light months.
Relatively.
Oh boy. Well, the playoffs are certainly a bear. Fun, but a bear. Hey, did you watch the Super Bowl last night?
Of course.
Did you have a rooting interest?
You know, I live in Omaha, and there's a lot of Kansas City Chiefs fans around here. In fact, when they won the game, there were fireworks going off all across the town. So I don't really care that much about the NFL, but I was happy that a lot of people that I am around were happy that the Chiefs won. So I guess I was fine with it.
I was a little torn. Do you want to hear some low family trivia?
Yeah, I've heard some low family trivia. People come up to me and they're like, "Hey, I was in Zach's history class. My cousin was in his Zach's history class. My cousin was Zach's dad was his swim coach."
You met someone who was in my history class and you didn't tell me?
Yeah, but I can't remember now. It's like, well, somebody's cousin was in your history class. I can't keep track.
I was a terrible teacher. I had no idea what I was doing. I could have been a good teacher.
That information was not offered. It was just they were in your class.
Terry Lowe, my father, one of the all-time badasses and the aforementioned coach, is the 1994 NFL Teacher of the Year. I don't know if that is a thing that exists now, all these years later, but in 1994 it sure did exist. And what happened was that NFL players would write essays to the league nominating their favorite teacher for this honor, and the winning teacher would go to the Pro Bowl, all expenses paid, in Hawaii, and be introduced at a halftime ceremony. And Terry Lowe was the 1994 Teacher of the Year. Do you know who nominated him? Steve Young. He was Steve Young's calculus teacher. So I've always been partial to the 49ers. However, Kevin Kalish.
Did you get to go to Hawaii as a 15-year-old or whatever, 14-year-old?
I did not. I did force my dad to take a picture with Deion Sanders, who was my favorite player at the time. However, Kevin Kalish, one of my best friends from college, is a Chiefs fan who grew up in Missouri. Not Kansas, mind you, but Missouri. And so as a rule, whenever I am a neutral party, as I am in all football games, I root for someone who is really emotionally invested and close to me. So I was rooting for the Chiefs. So I was happy they won. That's it. It was a good game. It was fun. It was a fun game.
I want to read this Steve Young essay that he wrote about your dad. That's what I'd like to get my hands on.
Look, I don't know how steep the competition was for the 1994 Teacher of the Year. Like, I don't know how many players nominated. It could be 200. It could be 5. It could be everyone. I don't know. But my dad was the winner and got to go to the Pro Bowl. Is exciting moment. I'm sure we have it on tape. I'm sure there's a VHS tape. That's probably not even on TV, the halftime ceremony. Anyway, go Chiefs. Andy Reid seems such a nice guy. If there are bad Andy Reid stories, I don't want to hear them. Brian Windhorst, I have one introductory question for you. You ready?
Okay.
Who of the teams that are 2-6 in the Eastern Conference, Toronto, Boston, Miami, Indiana, Philadelphia, who is most interesting to you as a trade deadline operator out of that group?
Well, I think Philly will absolutely make a move. They will get any shooter they possibly can. I feel like they don't have much to trade, as you well know and have documented. But the most interesting team to me is the Celtics. Because I feel like if Clint Capella is truly available, as Woj says, I was talking with Tim Bontemps about this, who lives in Boston and tracks the Celtics. There's a trade package there that the Celtics could put together. If they got their hands on Clint Capella, granted he is not Bill Russell, but he would dramatically change their situation against big teams. I would like that for them. They'd have to do it without trading any of their big five. So you'd be talking about, Daniel Tice, being in the deal probably, Poirier being in the deal, Romeo Langford maybe being in the deal. and, you know, one of their first round picks. I don't think they would give the Memphis pick, but I don't know. You could try to get it.
Memphis pick ain't that sexy anymore.
That's true. That's true. If, you know, Houston, I think, as Woj just detailed, you know, they're trying to acquire a wing player, and if that assets helps them get a wing player elsewhere, it's kind of complicated. I'm not saying that would definitely happen, but I got to believe that Boston is in the mix there.
Yeah, Capella only makes 14.9 this year, which means Boston can get to the math without including Smart, which is the sort of like that's the $12 million salary that everyone is throwing around in all these trades. They can get to the, you know, Tice plus Canner plus whatever
Canner. I forgot Canner. You'd have to have the Canner in there.
And Boston is way below the tax. Like, they have plenty of room to absorb an extra $3-4 million of salary, which most teams do not have. Most of the buyers are – a lot of buyers and sellers actually are pretty close to the tax in either direction. You know, it's funny because Houston's challenge in dealing Capella is that everyone sees what they're doing, which is, well, we think centers are the most replaceable commodity in the NBA. And even though Clint Capella is really good and he can rim run and block shots and all of that, like, we think we can get 20 guys who can set screens for James Harden and roll and dunk. So please give us a lot of stuff for this replaceable commodity, the guy that we, you know what I mean? Like, it's, so there, that's their challenge. And Boston is like team replaceable commodity. Like, yeah, we'll just roll with Daniel Tice. We'll roll with Enes Kanter. Throw in some Robert Williams III who's been injured for a long time. Like, we're good. Like, we'll just do the poo-poo platter center. That's the whole way we built our team. I agree with you, though, that Boston – I haven't heard a lot of Boston noise. The noise I've heard is fringy, like guys you can get for 2 seconds and filler or a really, really, really bad first-round pick. I haven't heard – like, there was always the Drummond noise. Are they going to get in for Drummond? I don't think so. And so I don't – but I agree they're interesting because, man, they're really good. They're really good and – when you're really good, like your window of being really good ain't always as long as you think it's going to be, right?
The other thing is, if you're 2-3, you know, if you can lock yourself into 2 or 3, it's going to be difficult for Philly. Philly's got an uphill climb to get into 2-3.
I'd rather be 6 than 4-5.
Well, yes, if Philly's 6, that blows up your 2-3 idea. But if Philly's 4 or 5. And you're if you're Boston and you can solidify 2 or 3, and you don't have to beat, you know, you would face the possibility of avoiding Philly, who is their nemesis. I know they just got a win last week, which was great. But if whoever wins that between Boston, Miami, and Toronto, whoever gets into 2-3 faces the possibility of not having to beat both Philly and Milwaukee. It's attractive. And, you know, I think Boston's got to feel like there's an opportunity. I think they have to sniff. I think Toronto should too. You know, they've won 11 in a row. I just don't know what they can really do. I think they can do a lot.
You start throwing OGN and Obi's name in the trade machine, you can get a lot of dudes. I don't think they're going to do that because Masai Ujiri's track record, as aggressive as he can be sometimes, he doesn't throw young players that are that good under cost-controlled contracts with restricted free agency looming in the future. He doesn't throw those guys around loosely.
Yeah, well, let me change the verb from can to will. I don't know what they will do. Also, the reality is they're guarding 2021 cap space because Masai, you know, thinks he might have a shot at Giannis. Now, it's a long way off, but, you know, Masai's not even under contract himself. But
you know the best way to get a shot at Giannis is? Beat him in the playoffs this year.
Beat the Bucks. Yeah.
That's the best way to get a shot at Giannis in 2 years.
Well, along those lines, Zach, I would not be surprised if we see Milwaukee do something before Thursday. From what I understand, they're hunting for a bench shooter. You know, they have that Indiana Pacers first that's burning a hole in their pocket. You know, they have some pieces they can trade. You know, John Horst has done some good midseason deals. You know, last year the George Hill trade really helped them, I felt like.
I don't think George Hill has missed a three this whole year. I think he's shooting 100% from three.
I know Milwaukee is out there hunting for any sort of shooting that they can get in the second unit. If they can get a first unit player, they'd love it too, but second unit. So I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee makes a move before Thursday.
I love the Covington fit for them. I think what if they can get, I mean, Marcus Morris is probably too much of a ball stopper for Bud's taste. But if you could get Marcus Morris in the right role and to have the right mentality, I think he'd be good there. I just like the idea of a combo forward so that they can just get a little bit bigger without shooting or without losing any shooting when they sort of downsize their lineups. They can get a little bit more size. They don't have as many guards like on the floor at the same time. I do have to say though, I like Robert Covington. I think Robert Covington is like a top 10 most overrated player in the NBA. People talk about Robert Covington like he's Bruce Bowen with Kyle Korver's jump shot. And it's like, I'm like, he's good. Like Robert Covington is
good.
Well,
he's gettable. That's why people are talking about him.
He's going to swing the championship. Like Robert Covington is good and his contract is good. There's a lot of like teams are worried about his health, and his legs long term. Like he's good, but boy, people talk about him. He's a star. He might be a star role player, I guess, but I like his fit in Milwaukee. I agree that Milwaukee is going to try to do something. I don't know if they'll get there. The other thing with Boston that's sort of like a sneaky thing is I don't know what Gordon Hayward is doing with his player option for next year. It's $34.2 million. That's a lot. Given his injuries, and this year's injuries were sort of fluky and random, he just might take it, but the way he was playing before that first injury when he got hurt in San Antonio in December, I think, the way he was playing, he was the best non-Kemba player on their team before that injury, I think. And you could see a world in which he declined that option to lock in a 4-year whatever mega contract that maybe isn't 34 per year, but is a lot of security for a guy who's had some scary injuries. I don't see a circumstance in which they trade Gordon Hayward, but do you have any intel? Like, what is he doing with that option? I don't know what he's going to do.
I feel very confident that he will not be traded.
No, I feel very confident he won't be traded. I just wonder if he's a name that could be in play this summer that we don't expect.
Well, there's a handful of these guys who have options this summer who you're unsure of. DeRozan, Andre Drummond, guys who, if they opt out, are going to have a hard time getting the same salary that they have now, but they certainly can extend their guaranteed money. I think it's going to be an interesting summer, and I think bird rights are going to really matter a lot this summer. And so you're going to opt out if you have an understanding with your team. They're going to keep you. I think if you don't have an understanding with your team that they're going to keep you and you're going to lose your bird rights, I don't think it's a good summer to be a free agent.
Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience, which is the only thing they should care about. But with millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, which is important, SeatGeek, our old friend, proves that there's a better way. You can search for tickets for anything you want. SeatGeek gathers tickets from all over the secondary market in one place. You don't have to click on 20 different sites anymore. It rates each seat on a scale of 1 to 10, green dots mean good deals. Red dots maybe means less good deals. It's super user-friendly. You can find tickets to everything, sports events, concerts, comedy shows, whatever it is. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. And SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first purchase. Wow. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code LOW, my last name, the name of this podcast, L-O-W-E. Bam, $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOW for $10 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. I wish I could find a win now move for the Raptors that makes sense, because they are, if you're not watching the Raptors, watch the Raptors. They are an absolute joy to watch. They are so smart. They push the pace. Everybody makes the extra pass and the extra cut. They are like a thrill to watch. They have so many smart, high IQ guys, even without Gasol, who's injured right now. They've won 11 in a row. They're on pace for 59 wins. You know how many games they won last year with Kawhi Leonard? 58. And boy, if they, I just don't know who the guy is. I don't know who Drew Holiday is a good fit there. I don't know that there's a workable deal for both sides. I mean, this is the thing you keep sort of running into, but I want them to make a win now move just because it's more fun. I want Miami to make a win now move. I want all these teams to go for it. Philly, I agree, will do something on the fringes. I want Oklahoma City to make a win now move. How about that? How about that's what I like. They have all these.
I read that in your piece.
They're not. I would be very surprised if they did it because they have all those picks for a reason. It's to use them in trades down the line. They don't really care that they have they have more picks than they can actually roster over the next X amount of years. They're 30-20, man. You think they got a real wing to play those Ferguson, Dort, and Dort's been pretty good actually. I like Dort. You know, Diallo, et cetera, minutes. You had a real wing in there. Dallas, Houston, Utah, Denver, like, they don't want any part of that team in the playoffs. That's a fun team. But I don't see that happening, sadly.
All right. Well, the team that I have heard some rumblings about as a surprise buyer, and it's really a surprise to me, are the Wizards of Washington, D.C. I'd like to point out that the Wizards are in 10th place, Zach. It's not an impressive 10th place. They're 17-31.
3 games out in the playoff race.
But they're only 3 games out. And I heard that they are quietly trying to buy. And not only that, but, you know, Bradley Beal made some grumbles last week. I think you want Brad on the right side because even though he signed an extension, this summer comes fast. And I, you know, one of the guys that I think is out there who Washington would have some interest in is
I'm on pins and needles. Tristan Thompson is what you just said.
Tristan Thompson.
Woo, yeah. Baby.
And also Washington has they have some second round picks. You know, you remember they took on all those Lakers players. They got a couple of second round picks in that deal. They have a couple of second round picks from the Bulls. They have some second round picks, and I think we're going to see some guys go for a couple of seconds or 1 second. You know, like the Cavs made the Jordan Clarkson trade for 2 seconds. They would prefer to move Tristan for a first, but if we get to Thursday and there's 2 seconds or something like that, you know, I could see him moving somewhere. I think Washington is in the mix there for that, and I think there's some motivation from the Cavs to cash out Tristan at this point, even though I think if he stays, there's a chance he could resign.
This is what's happening right now with 72 hours left. Teams with players on the Tristan Thompson, Jay Crowder level, and I think you can probably throw Andre Drummond into this, even though he's a bigger name than those guys, are asking for good firsts in exchange for them. And teams chasing better players than that or more coveted players than that are trying to get those players with bad firsts. Like Marcus Morris will give you a bad first. Davis Bertāns will give you a bad first. And in the next 72 hours, the latter sort of team will either increase its offer to the point that they can get said players, or the former sort of team, the team with Tristan Thompson and Crowder, will deflate their offers to the point that you're talking about so they can sell those players. And that's like what these next 72 hours are about. Tristan Thompson in Washington is interesting. They have Jan Mahinmi, who's actually been somewhat okay for them. He's shooting threes now. Thomas Bryant just got back from injury. Mo Wagner was sensational to start the season before getting injured. Literally one of the best offensive players in the league per minute. Tristan Thompson would help them. And you're right that the Beal thing is looming, right? Like, this is why you won't see Davis Bertāns traded for a 2023 first round pick, because Bradley Beal doesn't care about that. Bradley Beal needs to get better now, or else that situation could go sideways on them. So that's interesting to me. Tristan Thompson, huh? I like it.
I think the Cavs are going to absolutely test the total and complete market for Tristan. They will always back it up with, we don't have to trade him. We feel like we can extend him or even re-sign him in the summer. But, you know, they, of course, would never admit they would only trade him for a second or, you know, maybe even a really good single second, depending on what it is.
Well, you get a choice, right? Do you do that? Or do you lose the guy for nothing? Now, Detroit isn't totally boxed in with Drummond in that regard, because he could just be on their team next year and like that could be acceptable to them. But you've heard you mentioned on your podcast this morning, you've heard some Drummond noise with a contender out west, which didn't shock me, but is somewhat interesting.
So I have heard that the Clippers are really, I know that the Clippers have been tied to ball handlers. They've been tied to combo forwards and wings. But I hear that they're looking for a center, that they're worried about Zubac, even though they like Zubac, but they're worried about, you know, a series against Utah or Denver, and even to a certain extent against the Lakers, but Utah or Denver, where they'd really need, you know, a true big to they'd need him for 30 minutes. They couldn't get away with, Montrezl Harrell would be a little bit, you know, compromised to a certain extent. So, I hear they're searching for bigs, and if the price is right on Drummond, you know, they have their first round pick that is, as you pointed out, they can't trade another first at all except for this year's.
The world will be underwater by the time they can trade another first round pick. It's all
that's
over
possibly that. True. Yeah. So, and I don't think, you know, the 26th or 25th pick in this draft is going to materially change their position. So it's kind of burning a hole in their pocket to use it. And, you know, they have some pieces that they could trade. The challenge would be, you'd potentially get Drummond cheap. The challenge would be it'd be a multiplayer trade. You'd have to put together three salaries.
Yeah, he makes mucho dinero.
This is one of the things about the trade machine that is a flaw in my mind. I see people constructing these trades. You have to pay attention to roster spots. You can't make a 5-for-1 trade or, you know, a 4-for-2 trade if the roster spots aren't available. And yes, there's, if a team's motivated enough, it can happen. You can cut players. You can send players elsewhere. You know, Cleveland is a team that has two roster spots right now that would be glad to be compensated to take a player or two off of your hands. But I would watch any center of any quality. If they're on the market, if it's a true five, I would think that the Clippers would be sniffing around based on what I hear. I think Drummond's in that class. I think Tristan Thompson potentially is in that class, although he's not the classic big that you'd like, but he's a switchy big who's terrific offensive rebounder, has a history of playing great in the postseason. I'd watch the Clippers and centers. I don't necessarily think that they could pull off a Drummond move, but Drummond would be the best guy that fits what they're looking for. And, you know, again, it would take, you know, Mo Harkless and JerMichael Green potentially or Patrick Patterson and you might have to include Zubac in that deal in addition to a pick. So, but I would just watch the Clippers, and bigs, because I think that's one of the things that they're concerned about as they look at potential matchups in the West.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know they're concerned a little bit about Harrell's rebounding. Their rebounding really falls off a cliff when he's in the game. And Zoo is good. Zubac is good. He has great pick and roll chemistry with Kawhi. And they know that. And I think that will weigh on their decision a little bit. They to me were the biggest lock in the league to do something. And I think the challenge for them is like that first round pick, it's still valuable to them, even though it's like you said, 25th, 26th. Like they can flip that at the draft for somebody else's future pick and get something that carries forward for them as a trade asset. But I do think they're. I would put it this way: I think they're like half a player away from being the best team in the NBA. I mean, I picked them to make the finals as is, so I don't know necessarily that.
Me too.
They really need to do something, but just like they don't need a huge thing, but I just feel like I don't know what I exactly mean by half a player, but like, it's a little bit of everything, like a little bit of ball handling, another tweener forward who's like better than the Patterson, JerMichael Green, Mo Harkless, poo-poo platter, like someone to play like six of those minutes, someone who can get they just need a little of everything, and it's just like half a guy. I don't know if Drummond's the guy. Drummond, I don't know what that return is going to be for Detroit, but that's a classic case of like, and it's hard for teams, like the Pistons particularly in a market that's not going to draw free agents, like they're going to end up having traded Drummond too late. A year ago, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, they could have gotten real, real stuff for Andre Drummond. And that's easy for me to say because they were trying to make the playoffs and they did make the playoffs. And it's just, like the Jazz traded Dante Exum too late. And it's just like, it just happens with your own guys and guys that you've come to care for and stuff. So keep an eye on the Clippers. Keep an eye on the
also
Wizards,
just huh? Remember that the Clippers did a big complex deal just a year ago with the Pistons. Those front offices have worked together well. And one of the things that happened with that trade, although Blake Griffin was frustrated that he was just signed to a 5-year deal and then was flipped and, you know, still has a grudge against the Clippers for it. Both sides came out of that trade feeling really good about how it went. They both felt good about it. So I think that, you know, those sides have worked together before. I'm just sort of connecting dots more than anything, more than I actually think that's actionable information. But,
just watch for does Cleveland, no one knows the Cavs better than you. Do they have anything for Love? I just keep hearing nothing, nothing going on.
We have a fundamental problem here, which is that, the executives that I talk to think that taking on Love is something that needs to be incentivized. That taking on a player with $100 million on his contract with that injury history, like the Cavs would have to sweeten the pot, either by willing to take on salary, which they have shown the willingness to do, or with an additional asset. And the Cavs feel the exact opposite. The Cavs feel like that he is still a guy who can put up huge numbers, and that they should be, rewarded for trading him, that, you know, that you have to pay for him. And that's a disconnect that exists right now. And,
it hasn't softened. It's been like that since they signed that extension, and hasn't changed.
The real problem that the Cavs have is that you can sit here all you want and have a stare down with your adversaries trying to make a trade. And it's a really, really important trade for Kobe Altman, because we all know he's going to get traded at some point. And that trade is going to end up being pretty, pretty important to them. But out actually on the court, it's a bad situation. You know, Kevin has been a problem child all year long. He's at times tried to be on good behavior, but he's gotten into it with Kobe. He's gotten into it with Beeline. He's gotten into it with teammates. His effort level on the court is atrocious at times. They played a game Saturday night. I know nobody was probably watching, but they played against the Warriors on Saturday. The effort that they gave overall, especially Kevin's effort, was just pathetic. And, you know, they've got young players on the team that they're trying to mold that they think are going to be part of their future, and they got the highest paid player in their star going through the motions, sometimes not even going through the motions on defense. And so, like, you know, they need to make a good move. They need to do something to help them long term. But at the same time, Kevin Love on that team right now with those young guys is not helping. So, you know, I think it would actually help them for all parties, just to get him out of there. But I don't sense that they're like going to do it just to make, I mean, he's just short of wearing a shirt to a game that says trade me. He's done everything but that in this effort.
The Chris Morris on his shoes, right? Wasn't it Chris Morris who wrote trade me on his shoes?
I don't remember that, but I have a vague recollection that somebody did that.
Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on vacation, a 5-hour energy shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-hour energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. It is zero sugar, 4 calories. Four? How do you just get exactly 4 calories? I don't know. In a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hardworking people. And now it comes in 2 great extra-strength tropical tastes. Strawberry banana and tropical burst. Ooh, they're delicious and can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both and go online to 5hourenergy.com. That's with the number 5, not the word. And use the code LOWE, L-O-W-E, the name of this podcast, to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. Go to shop5hourenergy.com. Shop5hourenergy.com with the number 5 and use the promo code LOWE to receive a one-time offer of 10%. 5-Hour Energy, energy on the go. Let's talk about, I'm going to throw some random, like, I don't know what's going on here, teams and players, and we can just sort of have fun with it. I don't know what's going on with the Phoenix Suns. Do you?
Are they a buyer or a seller? I mean, they're not completely out of it. They're like in 12th or 11th. You know, to me, the way the Blazers are playing, I would bet that they would overtake the Grizzlies. But, the Pelicans
Blazers, Spurs, Grizz is going to be a fun 3-team race for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and New Orleans.
And New Orleans is coming, that's right. I'll tell you, Zion is everything everyone said he was. That when he gets the ball on the left block and he spins baseline, he is gone before his defender even knows what in the hell just happened. And if he misses, his second jump is so fast. Like, he's going so fast, I'm not sure he's fully, in control of it. Rarely do you see a guy who has an insane first step and an insane second jump. That dude is ridiculous.
He's been awesome, even though it's very clear he's a little bit overwhelmed with everything being thrown at him. The tragedy that we had in the NBA in the country last week obscured what was a phenomenal first five games for Zion. Nobody had the ability to even pay attention to it, but Zion was great. And even like yesterday they played in Houston, and even though they lost that game, Zion had like three or four jaw-dropping plays. So if you're Phoenix, like, you know, can you win that race? I mean, I'm kind of like, if they wanted to,
I can tell you the answer is no, you can't.
Right. But I don't know if they've, I mean, like, if, you know, they could sell Aaron Baines for a nice piece if they wanted. I mean, that's a guy that the Clippers, I'm sure, would be very interested in.
He's a very good player. Aaron Baines, if he's healthy, Aaron Baines helps you win basketball games. And
he'd be great for the Clippers.
Kevin Pelton noted today in his piece on Drummond, he is one of those guys who may not blow you away with his rebounding totals, but he's boxing out like eight dudes at the same time so everyone else can go get rebounds.
Can shoot threes. Great, you know, type of guy that you would feel good about trading for because he's not going to come in and rock the boat. Total workman, like defends, shoots threes.
I don't know. Let's talk about the Pelicans. Forget the Suns. I don't know what the Suns are going to do, and we can talk about it in this context. But I don't really know what's going to happen with Jrue Holiday. He's the sexiest name that is allegedly on the market. I just can't tell how much on the market he actually is. And it's interesting from this perspective. I like this Pelicans team. They start Lonzo, Jrue, Ingram, Zion, Favors. And then they play Zion some at center, and they play him some with Melly. But you would think that lineup is a little bit low on shooting, but Lonzo's shooting it better now. Ingram's had an amazing shooting season. And there's so much ball handling and IQ on the floor at the same time, and already it's very clear that Zion's feel and passing is the most underrated part of his game in terms of, like, there was not a lot of hype about that, and he's already very good at that. And I feel the way about his passing the way I did about Ben Simmons' defense. When I first saw Ben Simmons playing the NBA, I was like, oh, my God, this guy's a monster defensively. Nobody told me that. I like the way they play. And Jrue Holiday fits all that. He's another ball handler. He's not overtaxed handling the ball with this group. On the other hand, all those guys are young. They're all on the upswing. How much do you really lose this season if you trade Jrue Holiday and in return you get like a league average shooting guard? The name I just made up was Gary Harris. Like half a win? Half a win this season? How many wins next year? Like how much difference does it actually make to have that downgrade if you can upgrade elsewhere or get some draft assets? Like it's a really interesting, like Zion is, you just threw a 30% usage rate onto your team. So he's taken possessions from everyone, including Jrue Holiday. I'm just not sure. And I think Jrue Holiday is really good. I'm not sure how much they lose if they can find the right deal, but it's Denver, it's Miami, it's maybe a surprise team X. Like, I don't hear a lot of like, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. Does it seem like it's going to happen?
No, I mean, in conversations that the Pelicans have had with other teams, they've expressed an interest, if they're going to do anything, in acquiring another veteran player, because one of the things that they thought led to their struggles early on was how young they were. And when Derek Favors came back from being away from the team with injury, and he had a personal tragedy, his mother passing away, that the stability that even he added to them made a humongous difference, and that they almost feel like they're too young. So the idea that they would take a stable veteran and trade him seems like it was against what they've been talking about. Having said that, if they made Jrue Holiday available, there would be a bidding war, especially because of the dearth right now. And, you know, when you talk to various executives around the league, when you talk philosophy with them, one of the things that they'll talk about is, you know, the best time to sell is when nobody else is selling. And, you know, if
this
they
is
actually
why the Knicks should trade Marcus Morris. The Knicks could get a bidding war for Marcus Morris right now if they traded him.
that's another Clipper option. If that
the Clippers
happens.
Wanted but, to sign him in free agency, they would definitely. Right. I would be shocked if the Clippers wouldn't go up their first round pick for Marcus Morris. That's just pure speculation on my part. I want to make that clear. That just makes too much sense.
Yeah. So if they actually made Holiday available, I think Miami would be bidding. I think Denver would be bidding.
But what is Miami bidding? I don't think they're bidding Hero. I don't see it. Do you see it? Hero's the piece that swings it like, okay, you're in the conversation now.
I guess, but if I'm Miami and I traded for Drew Holiday by Thursday, I'm thinking I have a chance to win the East this year. So, I mean, let's just, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I'm always going to be partial to Drew. I, by the way, would not trade him. You made a case in your column today about from an asset standpoint.
I would. I would if I can get this. If I can get plug and play replacement who's worse than Drew Holiday and 2 to 3 future assets. So, like, Malik Beasley to me is not a future asset because I'm going to have to pay him a lot of money. One first round pick plus Malik Beasley does not interest me. If I can get, Denver doesn't have a player who fits the bill, but just let's say.
Well, yes, they do.
They're not trading Michael Porter Jr. It's not
okay. Well, then you're not getting Drew. This is what I would say. Well,
Michael Porter Jr. by himself, I'm doing the trade in a millisecond if I'm New Orleans. Just that right. plus.
But that trade's not. But as you said, that trade's not available.
If I can get like 2 unprotected first round picks and a plug and play player that I feel okay giving minutes to in Drew's place, I think I'd do that if I'm New Orleans. It's not an easy decision. I love Drew Holiday. I wrote a big, huge profile of Drew Holiday last year. I think he's a fantastic human being and a great player. It's not an easy decision. I just think that's what I would do. That's all.
Okay, so here's what I'd say. I covered part of the games in the series 2 years ago when New Orleans swept the Blazers in the first round. And I saw Drew Holiday at his absolute peak. Shutting down to a certain, whatever, as much as you can shut down Dame Lillard. Okay. I would never want to lose that player, unless, he obviously will age out at some point, but I want that player on my team. I think that, you're talking about maybe replacing him with you use the Gary Harris reps. Gary Harris can't do that. So if I wanted to be a contender in the next year or two, and I think New Orleans has big aspirations for next season, I don't think he's as easily replaceable. And if I'm New Orleans, I already have assets and picks and stuff coming, from the Lakers.
It's fair. It's a hard decision. It is interesting you bring up that series because that series was 4 games. It has really changed the perception of Drew Holiday around the league. And we haven't quite seen that guy since that series, but the playoffs just resonate, and I think rightfully so. The stage is bigger. The games matter much more.
I was at the games in Portland. They finished very, very strong that year. The place was absolutely rocking, as Portland can get. I've been to 4 playoff games in Portland the last 2 years. They lost all 4 of them because I was at the Western Conference Finals last year. It was a jaw-dropping performance by Drew Holiday in that series.
Did it leave you agog?
I was a gawking at those games. If I was Denver, I've said this before and I'll just reiterate it. I'll see if you agree with me, because you pretty much said the exact opposite in your column today.
Ooh, good.
If I'm Denver, I'm looking at the lay of the land and I see the Clippers and Lakers. I think the Clippers and Lakers will both be stronger a year from now. You give the Lakers their exceptions this summer. You give them a chance to sign more minimum guys who want to join that team. The chemistry there looks great. It looks like a place you want to go. I think that, depending on how much gas is left in LeBron's tank, I suspect the Lakers will be better a year from now. I also expect the Clippers to be better a year from now. They will retrofit a little bit. You give them another cycle. They have a great front office. You're going to get Kawhi a chance to get and Paul George more settled. I think both of those teams are better a year from now. I think if you're going to take it from one of them this year, or you're going to take it from one of them, it's going to be now. It's going to be this year. And if I'm Denver and I know that I'm going to lose potentially 2 or 3 guys off my roster because I just can't afford them. They're going to be free agents and I just can't afford them. I sense that the time is now.
Ooh.
You go now. The problem is for them, they have nobody to, there's nobody to go trade for. You know, so if Drew Holiday became available, I would seriously consider trading Michael Porter for him. And I mean, people in Denver would slap me across the face for saying that.
I would not.
But my
it's fun view, that like, we disagree. I would definitely not. Unless, well, you know what? The one wild card is I've got, if I'm Denver, I've got the health dossier and I know more about his health than any team in the league. I've presumably put hundreds of man hours and expertise into studying it and projecting it long term. That's the only thing they could, but right now what he's doing on the court, I'm an absolute no on that.
So here's the thing. I had a really important conversation with Masai Ujiri and, you know, it was off the record. So I don't want to say too much about this, but this was last year during the playoffs. But one of the things that Masai said was one of the things I had to learn in my career as general manager is how much talent and what you need to win. And I went into playoff seasons in the past thinking that I had a team that was a championship team, and I didn't understand that I didn't. And if you look at what Masai did last year, he showed his experience. He was like, you know, I know I got these guys, but you know what? I'm going to go get Marc Gasol because I think I can win it this year. I need to win it this year. I have this window and I'm going to go do it right now. And he did it. And I think Denver, and because the point that you make in your column today is, you know, Jamal Murray's 22. Jokic is, you know, maybe not even in his prime. Maybe just beginning his prime. You shouldn't feel a sense of urgency. I look at it completely opposite. I look at it as this is a transition year for the league. We're going to see probably a new champion this year, although maybe I shouldn't rule the Raptors out.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
It's a transition year.
Don't rule it out.
So if Drew Holiday became available and I was Pat Riley and I was like, you know what? We can beat Milwaukee if we get Drew Holiday. You know, they're one of the teams that have won in Milwaukee this year. So that's the only thing I would say is I think that if they actually made Drew available, the bidding war would be so hot amongst these teams who feel like this could be our year.
I don't think he's unavailable.
Well, I will say this. I know David Griffin. I covered him in the Cleveland years very closely. David Griffin has a saying, and on one hand, it sounds kind of strange, but no player is ever untradeable. Now, he may have said that about LeBron, and he probably might say that about Zion right now, but Griff never ever wants to be accused, you know, like Chris Paul accused Daryl Morey of lying to him about availability. Griff will openly say, everybody is tradable. I'm not going to there's no sacred cows. I'm not going to promise you that I won't trade you. But his answer is the same every single day of the year. And so he doesn't hem himself in. So, like, if you're asking me whether Drew Holiday is available, knowing David Griffin, I would say he would never say that he wouldn't be. But if I were Denver, I would be absolutely hunting for a big fish. And I don't, you know, look, their ownership plays a role. They're limited by the amount that they can spend. The tax dollars are important there. You know, they have paid the tax before, but, you know, it's not something that's done lightly there. You know, there's a lot of other factors than just that. But looking at the lay of the land, if I was Denver, I would be trying to hunt because this is my year. Let me say this loudly and clearly.
I am only speculating, okay? Only speculating. If Denver called David Griffin right now and said, we'll give you Michael Porter for Drew Holiday, I think that deal gets done fast. If Denver called David Griffin right now and said, we won't give you Michael Porter, but we'll give you Gary Harris, something else, and three unprotected first-round picks, I think they're not only in the door, I think they've kicked the door down. They are the one who knocks. They have a real chance to get Drew Holiday. If Miami called and said, we'll give you – well, Miami just doesn't have the same kind of pick equity. With all the picks they have out the door. But if Tyler Hero, Bam is not getting traded. If they said, we'll give you Tyler Hero, every pick we could possibly have, I'm not sure how many that is, it might only be one. Plus, you know, Griff would really just have to love Justice Winslow. You have to have faith that you can get him healthy and sort of get him back along the career path he showed. I think you can get in the door. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm sure that Michael Porter is not on the table. But I'm saying it to make a point. Denver, today, A plan executed today is more valuable than the greatest plan in the history of the world tomorrow. Today is the operative time for Denver, in my opinion.
They say the best offense is a good defense. They do say that. And that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. It's time to help keep your engine running like new. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered to defend against four main engine threats, the big four: gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction. It's Shell's most advanced fuel ever, protecting your engine like Rudy Gobert protects the rim for the Utah Jazz. How about that? Like rim protectors, not all premium fuels are the same. Now that's fuel for thought. And if you're a Fuel Rewards member, you save at least 5 cents per gallon on every fill up with gold status. That can add up. Not a member? Download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com to join and never pay full price for gas again in engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Let's go around a little bit. Another team, we shortchanged Phoenix. That's fine. I don't think Phoenix is going to do anything crazy. They were always the sort of crazy Kevin Love team, but I'm not feeling it. Sacramento to me is now positioned as one of the more interesting teams, if not the most interesting team in the league. They are 6 games out in the loss column of the 8th seed. So they have to get religion and say, okay, yeah, we want to make the playoffs. We want to end this consecutive years away from the playoff streak. It's not happening this year. We have Bogdan Bogdanovic, who's going to be a restricted free agent. We just have a lot of guys. Like, we have a lot of, like, I thought Nemanja Bjelica would be the biggest no-brainer trade candidate in the whole league this year, because Harrison Barnes is a 4. Bjelica is a 4, although they're playing him at center now and then. Bagley, I thought they were going to give some minutes at the 4. Now, he's been injured most of the year, and they've played him mostly at the 5 his last healthy stint. So the logjam hasn't been quite as severe. But between Bogdanovic and Bjelica, and I think Harry Giles is available if anyone cares, I just think they have a lot of guys. Any feel for what they do? I think Bogdanovic is just going to come to the wire. I think it's just going to require, here are the deals, here's what's on the table, is it worth it to us?
I'll tell you what. Maybe it doesn't matter. It didn't matter. I find it hard to believe that the Serbian GM is going to trade maybe the best young Serbian player. Serbian, at least.
They're both Serbian. Bailey's Serbian, too.
No, I'm talking about...
I know who you're talking about.
I mean, obviously, you know, Jokic, the best young Serbian player, but certainly the best young perimeter Serbian player. I just find it hard to believe he's going to let him go. You got to wonder if they have buyer's remorse on the Buddy Hield extension.
The Buddy Hield, you know, coming off the bench thing is very strange. Everything there this season has, starting with the 0-5 stretch, has been very strange.
I know he's restricted, but Bogdan does not want to be a reserve. He does not want to be a reserve, and he doesn't want to be paid like a reserve. And so, you know, in addition to the fact that, how it helps their team, I think he wants to start. He's very motivated. You know, I learned a lot about him in China last year. He was terrific. He was one of the best players in that tournament. And he was the first one there, last one to leave, you know, really hard worker. I like his makeup. I don't know what his ceiling is. He's also 27. I say he's young. I guess he's not even really that young. I don't know how much better he can get. I think, you know, paying him thinking he's going to get a lot better may be a risk. But, I think he's a pretty interesting piece.
If Philly could ever get him.
Well,
that's a huge problem.
He would be great for them. He'd be great for the Lakers. I mean, he'd be great for a lot of teams.
I don't have a feel for what they're going to do. And I think part of it is that they have, this is a tough decision. He's really good. He's in the prime of his career.
You know, Deadman's obviously not been a great fit. That'd be another option if the Clippers decide to go for a center. Deadman is a guy they could probably get their hands on. I don't know if that's the greatest fit, but,
have you heard, here's a name I want to throw at you. Let's start. Have you heard anything about the Spurs? DeRozan, Aldridge. It seems like they're just going to ride it out. I've heard zip. I've heard nothing.
Yeah, the Spurs they don't make mid-season moves. I think if one of them was available, I think that's a type of move that the Heat would be interested in, because that would be an upgrade, either DeRozan Or Aldridge would be an upgrade for them. And most importantly, it does not affect 2021 cap space when the Heat are harboring plans for their next world conquering domination. I don't know how that trade would work. I mean, obviously the Heat have some bad contracts that they would like to include. Obviously they would, you know, add picks or young players, but, if those guys were available, I think Miami would be interested. It would be an upgrade. It would be, you know, can you imagine, I mean, Myers Leonard's been pretty good this year, but can you imagine them putting LaMarcus Aldridge in as their starting four?
Yeah, and Bam can guard everybody. Bam, you don't have to worry about Bam's a center. Right. Bam can guard whoever you want on defense.
But again, that's just me putting pieces together. That's not me having actually heard that. But the Spurs don't typically make moves midseason. The only reason that the DeRozan thing is, you know, he could opt out and leave for nothing, and that's not an ideal situation no matter who you are. That could be a little bit of a game of chicken as well. So I don't know.
The only reason I brought them up is because I went through this exercise again this morning for one last time. I went through, like, who's a win now guy that we're just not seeing? Who's a guy? And so that implies probably on a bad team. And part of the interesting thing about this trade deadline is that several bad teams are not operating like sellers, like bad teams. Like Atlanta's right. not really operating that way. And New York, Charlotte is. Washington, you mentioned, might be a buyer. Chicago, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I went through and I'm like, I just want to look at all the rosters one more time. Who's a win now move that maybe is out there that we don't realize? I just couldn't find, like, we've talked about most of them, but here, I want to throw a name at you because this team is like a black box to me. Have you heard the name Zach LaVine anywhere?
No.
I know teams have called.
I've heard that if there's anything that the Bulls are going to do, I think Denzel Valentine, who actually is not a bad shooter from the perimeter.
Also has the goofiest, most effective floater in the NBA. I know teams have called the Bulls about Zach LaVine recently, good teams. The Bulls typically throw the phone out the window when people call about Zach LaVine. Just don't even bother. I assume that is still their stance, in part because Wendell Carter Jr. is injured, Markkanen's injured, Porter's injured. You traded Jimmy Butler in a defining pivot of your franchise in the, what, 3 years ago now? If you trade Zach LaVine for picks, that's a hard sell for your fans, especially after you've now promoted Zach LaVine's All-Star candidacy. Can we stop for a second? All-Star stuff. We reached a crescendo of All-Star.
What about the rising stars?
This is what I'm going to say.
I got
this,
agents bleeping at me about the rising stars. I'm hold on.
The statement from the Goodwin brothers about Tybal not making rising stars. Now, look, I have not sat down, Brian, you'll be surprised, and sorted out the 12-man rosters for the freaking rising stars challenge. So I don't know if Tybalt deserves it or not. I guess he does. I love Matisse Tybalt. He can guard 17 people at the same time. He's amazing defensively. I presume he's deserving. I don't know. That statement where they said, they released it to Chris Haynes, friend of the program, where they said, I guess the assistant coaches don't know what they're doing or whatever, and ass an assistant was capitalized, right there in that moment, that exact moment, it's like the Simpsons episode where you can pinpoint the moment where Ralph Wiggum's heart breaks on national television, on the Krusty Show. That moment was when NBA discourse reached its absolute nadir. It cannot get any stupider than that. That is the stupidest thing that has ever been said about the NBA ever, period. That was it right there. And the other thing I will say is, I don't know how you feel about this. Everyone, first of all, every game the night, that Thursday night, I watched the Wizards game. I don't know if I watched the Bulls game. The Wizards game was 3 straight hours of PR for Bradley Beal. How ridiculous it was that Bradley Beal didn't make the All-Star game. That was the whole game. The game did not, they might as not even, as well, not talked about the game. James Jones, the general manager of an NBA basketball team, released a statement like he's freaking Michael Jordan coming out of retirement, a one-line statement saying, I know an All-Star, Devin Booker's an All-Star. Okay, James Jones, who's coming off the All-Star team? Who is it? By the way, I agree with you. Devin Booker should make the All-Star team. He made my All-Star team. I would have picked him over Russell Westbrook. That's my pick. You're the general manager of a team, and you're just floating this statement out. Well, who comes off? Oh, it's tampering. I can't mention him. Okay, fine. Then don't release. We have... I wonder how you feel about this, Wendy. There, all of this stuff is then transitioned to, well, I think the All-Star team should be 15 names. And I get that. Like, it really does hurt to leave these guys off.
How about we just start with 13? I mean, really, because 13 players are active in an every NBA game.
Forget 13 about I just, could just live with. 13. I don't want 15. I actually like that. I like that it's, and again, it's easy for me to say these players are like, Devin Booker deserves it. It sucks that he's not making it. It really does. The Rising Stars Challenge, you could put 50 guys on that. I don't care. I kind of like that it's an exercise that makes me make tough decisions. That like, yeah, like it really hurt me that Paul George didn't make my team this year. Like it's because he's missed so many games. Like for some reason I like that it's just 12, and people will say, well, all NBA is 15. This should be 15. Well, all NBA is just 15. It's not two rosters of 15 guys. It's just 15. I don't know. I've been sidetracked. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I don't think the low point was Eric Goodwin's comment. I think it might have been Spencer Dinwiddie complaining about not getting invited to the Skills Challenge, which he won. And
I missed that.
And he flipped out and he ended up apologizing for the statements, but he said, folks don't care about me.
Jackson Hayes had a profane rant, apparently.
I know. I said, folks don't care about me. I'm Spencer. Quit playing.
About the Skills Challenge?
He flipped out about the Skills Challenge.
Now, I'll tell you what. I'll set up the Long Island City.
He did win the Skills Challenge, but who cares? Who Long cares Island, about the Skills Challenge?
Long Island City, where I live, has a really wonderful boardwalk and park area on the East River. I will personally set up a Skills Challenge. I'll get a spare tire. I'll hang it on. I'll set up an obstacle course, and I'll invite whoever wants to come. I'll hold
Easy
my
trip
own
for
skills.
Spencer. It's a short trip for Spencer.
Yeah, for the snubs. I'll invite the snubs. There's playground equipment we can probably make into a makeshift. Okay. So what the hell were we talking about? The Spurs? I don't remember.
You were talking about the Bulls.
Oh, Levine. Yeah, they're not going to trade Zach LaVine, but that's a name that I would call. He's interesting. He's a very polarizing player in the league. There are definitely lots of people who think if we rescued him from the Bulls and made him a third option and gave him a more stable environment, let's say there's a redeemable winning player in there somewhere because he's so talented offensively. But I don't know. I mean, are there any – the other names, like who are we missing names, are just little names. Like I think someone should go get Alex Len. I think Thad Young is an interesting kind of name. But like these are not names that are changing anyone's
world.
Well,
I'll tell you one name that no one's talking about, but my guess is we'll be talking about a week from now, is Marvin Williams.
He's on my list. It literally says Marvin in my notebook.
So, you know, he makes a lot of money. He's kind of hard to trade for. But his role has been reduced on purpose. Like, in fact, there could be two or three guys. I mean, I don't think the buyout market is going to be that robust this year.
It's funny you say that because a GM told me just yesterday, isn't it weird that I just haven't heard anything about the buyout market? Normally you hear teams saying, right, well, why am I going to trade for that guy? He's going to be on the buyout market. It just hasn't happened this year.
Well, and, you know, Charlotte, they've made the decision to play their young guys. They were open with their veterans before the season even started. Look, you're going to get less minutes. And so they've benched some guys. I mean, you know, Batum has been reduced. Kid Gilchrist doesn't play anymore. Biombo, I think, is an option as a buyout candidate. But Marvin Williams is an interesting guy. I mean, you know, he's very experienced. He's, low maintenance. Still shoots the three-pointer pretty well, has a pretty small role there, and, you know, is probably going to be a guy that's going to want a buyout. And, you know, he could help a lot of teams. Now, he's a guy where, like, I don't see why you couldn't, like, when I think of a team like Dallas, Dallas has Courtney Lee and a, you know, some assets. Like, I think you could probably get a guy like Marvin Williams for next to nothing. Because they're possibly going to buy him out.
I'm surprised Dallas, there is not that Courtney Lee plus 2 seconds package, and they have Golden State second, which is a good pick. Maybe that's why. Maybe they just want to keep that pick. That's just sitting there, and I'm surprised that
they've also got some young guys on their roster who they could, you know, toss in as well that could act as good assets. I'm surprised. Like I think if Marvin Williams gets bought out in a week, okay, and you know, it may not be a week. You know, the buyout deadline's not for till the end of the month. You watch; there'll be four or five teams crawling all over themselves to
for
get
sure. Yeah, about that Dallas.
No one's talking about him at all.
That Dallas thing, I just guessed that it was that Memphis is operating as if they have an Andre Iguodala deal they would do. And so I just guessed, pure speculation, that Dallas package is something that they would do. Mark Stein, our friend, has said that's not the case. They're not in on Iguodala, which is okay, interesting to me. I that deal makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe they just like that.
Tim McMahon, who's our Dallas guy, he has said one thing repeatedly, that Dallas is denying that they're out trolling for Covington or Iguodala. But that Dallas is known for not telling the truth.
Who knows? That makes a lot of sense to me as a trade for them. Larry Nance Jr. to me is an interesting one. Before the Mavs acquired Cauley Stein, I thought that might be a name I would go to as sort of a Dwight Powell facsimile. Now, obviously, he has several years on his contract, as do Maxi Kleba, as do Dwight Powell, so that's maybe a problem. But that's a name I thought of. And maybe he doesn't care, and I guess that's all that matters. It would be fun if Vince Carter attached himself to one of these teams that has a chance to win.
He's not having a great season.
I don't care. He's 43. He's 42. Right, right. He's dunking or whatever he is. It's ridiculous. He shouldn't be having a great season.
Right, right. Well, yeah. What would be good is if he requested it. This is not kind of who he is. He has not chased rings. Going to Sacramento, stay with Atlanta.
I'm surprised that we haven't heard about an all-star spot for him like they did with Wade and Dirk last year.
Well, he hasn't. I guess Dirk hadn't announced his retirement either. But he hasn't officially said he's going to retire. I don't know. But maybe we will. Probably would have been happening by now. But, if Vince asked for his release, I'm sure they would give it to him and he could pick where he could go. But that's not – I've talked to him about this. He doesn't want to chase a ring.
He'd much rather
have a role with the team.
Isn't it interesting to you that Atlanta seems so hell-bent on getting a center?
I think that – first off, I think there's two things at play there. I think number one, the owner, Tony Ressler, I know that Travis Schlenk has sort of downplayed what he thought there – their expectations for this year. I actually thought they were a borderline playoff team. I thought they might win 35, 36 games and contend for the eighth seed. Now, that's completely laughable now. And I've had to take my mea culpas on that. But I think the owner, he wants to see some winning and Trae Young has basically, he wants help. And I think there's some pressure to try to get Trae Young some help. And I think that that's playing into it. And I think the Drummond thing, I think that there were people in that organization who wanted to do that deal. And I don't think Travis Schlenk liked it. And he was able to fight them off, sort of establish that, he's got control and make that clear. But I think there's, I don't think Travis Schlenk is in a hurry. I think the pressures are in a hurry are, again, more visceral, the ownership and Trae.
Yeah, the Collins suspension ruined their season before it got started because they just don't have enough quality NBA players to survive that yet. I mean, and by the way, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, these guys are not supposed to be quality NBA players yet. They're rookies. Kevin Huerter is on his way to being one. He's in his second year. I just think it's interesting that they seem so interested in getting a center because, A, I think Alex Len is all right. Like, I wouldn't mind having Alex Len on my team playing, a sort of spot starter, like a token starter, 15-minute-a-game role. But as good as John Collins is offensively, he's learned to shoot the three from the corner and above the break. He can handle it some and all that. He's still at his best as a rim runner for Trae Young. And if you get another rim runner, I understand what you're doing. Like you don't have a lot of faith that John Collins at the five is a defensive lineup that's going to survive. They're just going to have a below average defense every year. I get it. I just wonder how that's good, like John Collins and Clint Capella. I get you stagger them this and that, but offensively, that's a fit that is going to take some work and is not obvious to me, as something that I would be like coveting, I guess. That's all. Anything else we haven't covered? Any other team you wanted to talk about? We got your Wiz, we got the Cavs, we got Drummond. Anyone else we've neglected?
I don't think so. I 10 days ago, a week ago, I would have thought this was going to be a pretty dead deadline. Maybe it's just the nature of the calendar, but Now I'm swimming more to, I think that there will be moderate action.
Yeah, there's always action. The one year there wasn't, it was the year that Redick to Milwaukee was like the biggest trade that happened.
Yeah.
And there were like six trades.
You mentioned this in your column today. I wouldn't rule out Golden State trying to get underneath the tax. The Willie Cauley-Stein trade opened the door for it. And people have pushed me off on this saying, oh, they're making tons of money. Don't worry about it. You know, and I'm like, well, here's the thing. I've watched owners operate for a couple of decades now in this job, and I've learned that if an owner can get under the tax, he likes to get under the tax. And the same thing with Oklahoma City. I mean, Oklahoma City has made it pretty clear.
Oh, they're going to get under. They're less than a million away.
I mean, why wouldn't you?
You have to. I mean, if you're that close, you have to.
So I would just say that, I mean, they're not going to go all out and do, you know, do crazy stuff to get there, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, at 3:25 Eastern, we think that the deadline's over, and then that one of those last deals comes out, and it's, oh, all of a sudden there's money dumping that went on. It wouldn't surprise me if Golden State tries to do something to get out. You know, they have a couple of guys that they can move pretty easily if they wanted to.
I like to think of the end of the deadline as still like in the early 90s when people are faxing stuff, like this, like the scene in Succession where they're printing out something but it goes to the wrong printer in the house and no one is able to find it. Like I'm imagining that happening at the end. Wendy, are we going to see you in LA? Are you going to be in LA for the jump for the trade? Where are we going to see you?
Yeah, I'm going to LA tomorrow. And we have a 3-hour trade deadline special Thursday. The jump will be 3 hours long, 2 hours before and 1 hour after.
Our friends at The Jump do a great job. I hope that Rachel has her little trade, like, plunger again this year.
I cannot officially speak to that, but I believe that there has been a change.
Ooh!
You know, there's a new studio for The Jump this year, which presents new challenges.
Oh, it's huge. It's like a, it's like an acre.
It's the old NBA Countdown studio. You know, the NBA Countdown now goes out of New York, and then Rachel does.
Paul Pierce has floated an idea because there are chairs and couches there. Have you heard Paul Pierce's idea for what they should do with that set?
No.
He wants to construct what he would call the Truth Lounge and have an open bar and people can come hang out and drink while the jump is going on, and, you know, or after. And I think that's a great idea, the Truth Lounge. People would pay to come to the Truth Lounge.
Well, there's a regulation hoop in there now, okay?
Yeah.
And whenever Scottie Pippen is on the show, like it used to be that, you know, the last half hour before the show, I would sit in the green room with Scotty and shoot the bleep, you know, on this. But Scotty will not be found. Scotty is out there shooting pre-show. He's like out there legitimately putting up three-pointers and, like sometimes getting a sweat in. Sometimes they gotta towel him down before the show. And it's funny, like there was actually like this, I have no idea what things cost, but there was this gigantic, you know, LED screen that, you know, probably was $50,000 or something that was underneath the basket because, you know, as the studio was set up, they wanted to be able to use the colors of that screen and everything. And they ended up taking that screen out because they were afraid that a ball would go through and hit the screen and break it. So, like, it's now, like, and, you know, we got, you know, for the jump, we got a bunch of Hall of Famers running around there. You know, one day it's Paul Pierce, one day it's T-Mac, another day it's Scottie Pippen. You know, there's legitimate basketball being played in there right now. So that's the cool thing. But apparently the plunger, I think, is the I can't remember what she called it. But I think, I don't want to break news, but I think there's been a change.
All right, well, I look forward to seeing what it is. Maybe it's a gong or something. I look forward to seeing what it is. I will be in Bristol piping into that, I think, once or twice. So perhaps we will talk.
We will welcome you. We have 3 hours.
Technology.
I hope there's going to be a bunch of trades to talk about. But in the event that there isn't, we will be glad to have you on to give your analysis of this upcoming summer, because I'm afraid that that might happen. But hopefully there will be some action.
Wendy, listen to the Hoop Collective. He and Tim Bontemps. And who else was on that this morning?
Bobby Marks
did a trade deadline preview much like this one. Listen to that. Listen to all the Hoop Collective podcasts. Read everything Wendy writes. Wendy, thank you very much for your time, and I will see
you soon. Thanks, Zach. Okay, take care.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.